Welcome into Real Pod Wednesdays. Dan Hope joined by Andy Anders. One day after Ohio State held its first spring practice of 2024 as a loaded Buckeyes roster took to the field for the first time this season on Tuesday morning at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. And Andy, it really struck me just being out there and seeing all the talent that Ohio State has out there, from the returning stars like Jack Sawyer and Denzel Burke and Emeka Buka and Travion Henderson and many more, to the transfers like Caleb Downs and Will Howard and Quinshon Judkins, to a very talented freshman class with guys like Jeremiah Smith and Aaron Noland out there. Even Mylon Graham, who hasn't enrolled yet, was out there watching practice. You see all those guys on the same field, and it really hits home how talented this Ohio State football team is going into the 2024 season.
Normally entering spring, we have all these questions about, you know, certain positions and who's going to be the guy where. And, you know, really there's only on each side of the ball to me one major positional question for Ohio State. You know, on defense, it's Will linebacker. On offense, it's right guard slash right tackle, depending on where Josh Fryer fits in. So maybe two positions there with the offensive line. But what we saw yesterday was Sonny Styles playing linebacker. And I think that's a change that you and I felt was needed to maximize Sonny's skill set. That seems like the best fit of his talents, seeing some of the struggles he had last year in open space. The depth of the Ohio State talent with the transfers that were brought in, with the experience they have coming back, it's really reminiscent of some of the most loaded rosters we've seen in Columbus, you know. And that, it just hit you yesterday. You put it up there with that 2015 group that returned so much from a national championship squad, with that 2019 group that had all the talent from a really loaded 2017 recruiting class that developed. And then you had Chase Young, Jeff Okuda on the defensive side, with Justin Fields coming in to play quarterback. There was those kinds of rosters are what Ohio State is looking at this year. And, you know, with a few things, you know, that Sonny Styles position change is going to be a learning curve for Sonny. And I think that's reflected in the fact that, you know, CJ Hicks is going to be, he was the starting linebacker yesterday for Ohio State. So there might be a position battle that plays out between the two of them, the two five-star prospects. But those sorts of takeaways, there just wasn't a whole lot of uncertainty outside those couple of things with Ohio State yesterday and the practice window we got to observe. And, you know, that it was just so striking seeing all the talent, all the depth that Ohio State has rolling into this 2024 season.
Yeah, I mean, if we're going to be honest, I think this spring is honestly not as interesting for us as it usually is, just because from our perspective, it's honestly more interesting when there's bigger question marks, when there's a lot of position battles happening, when there's more openings for, you know, younger players we haven't seen play a lot yet. From our perspective, like as journalists, that's honestly more interesting than going into spring and saying, well, the vast majority of starting spots are already accounted for. But, you know, if you're an Ohio State fan, it's a great thing that there's not much drama this spring, because it means that Ohio State does not have a lot of holes it needs to fill. There's not a lot of major question marks on this team, and that's a great thing. That's a testament to the kind of roster that Ohio State has built going into this spring. So there's still going to be plenty of storylines this spring, you know, still going to be very important to build depth across the board. You obviously don't know what's going to happen in that second transfer window after spring. And so building depth is as important as it's ever been, especially when you think about the potential for, you know, playing for your four college football playoff games this year. You know, building that depth is really important. So that's going to be a big point of emphasis for Ohio State this spring, is trying to get a lot of guys reps. You know, we've heard about that at the quarterback position, but it really applies to all positions. They're going to want to get a lot of guys as many reps as possible. Probably some of those guys that we know are, you know, going to be surefire starters, those guys probably aren't going to get as many reps as some other guys this spring, because Ohio State is going to want to keep them fresh, preserve their health for the season when it really matters. But there's going to be a lot of other talented players out on that field this spring. But, you know, as you said, I think certainly maybe the most intriguing position battle on this team right now is the one that's going to take place at will linebacker. And now that we know that that really is going to be a Sonny Styles versus CJ Hicks competition. I mean, these are guys whose names, but really ever since they got to Ohio State, like, fans perk up when they hear those names, because they were both five-star recruits in that 2022 class, and now they're both going into their third year at Ohio State. And I don't want to belabor this too much, because we talked about it a lot on last week's episode, so there's only so much more we can say after seeing 45 minutes of one practice. So I don't know that anything has necessarily really changed from what we talked about last week, other than the fact that we now know that Sonny Styles is going to be in that linebacker competition. Nobody from the coaching staff had confirmed that until Tuesday. And so now it has been confirmed. They are primarily looking at Sonny Styles as a linebacker. I mean, he looks like a linebacker. Like, you see him out there with the linebackers. Certainly from a physical standpoint, he does not look like a safety playing linebacker. If he was still with the safeties, he would look like a linebacker playing safety. But he looks like he belongs with the linebackers. He certainly has, you know, all the size there. I don't read a whole lot into CJ Hicks being the guy who was taking the first team reps during the one portion of 11-11 that we were able to see on Tuesday, because he's just moving to the position now in terms of Sonny Styles. So it makes sense that CJ would be the first guy out there on the first day of practice, considering he's been playing will linebacker for 2 years. But at the same time, I think that is a real competition, because CJ Hicks is a guy who, obviously, people have been waiting to see him earn a role on this defense. And he, you know, we know that Sonny Styles has a lot of talent, but we also know that CJ Hicks has a lot of talent. So both those guys deserve a very real opportunity to win that starting job. And I think that's certainly going to be a position that every time we're at practice this spring, that's going to be one of the spots our eyes go to see who's getting the most reps there, and how do those guys look?
That's a trend across the board. You know, making guys earn it was something we saw yesterday, I think, with the transfers largely. You know, Will Howard wasn't taking the first reps at quarterback. It was Devin Brown during the periods we saw. Carson Hinsman was the center and not Seth McLaughlin. So, you know, I think it's the first practice of spring. Guys aren't in pads yet. The position battles really can't even truly play out until you get those pads on and start hitting. And, you know, it just makes sense to give it to the guy who's either A, been in the program longer, or B, played the position before at this point in the off season. There's a lot of time to actually have the battle, figure those things out, and make the transfers earn it in those certain aspects, you know. And the thing continuing off that offensive line point, you know, with Hinsman playing next to Hinsman today, yesterday, pardon me, we saw Luke Montgomery at right guard. And, you know, he is a guy who has always had the versatility to slide around the line. Spoke to that when we spoke to him at the 1870 Society event here recently, about how he's always felt he has the ability to play all five positions. Justin Fry has echoed that in the past. And with that spot being open on the right side of the offensive line, I think that is a natural slide if they feel Fryer's the best fit at tackle and Montgomery's the best fit at guard. Ryan Day spoke very highly of Luke today, said he has a very, very high ceiling, really likes his athleticism. They feel like he has the bend and the strength with some of the added weight that he's gotten this offseason, going from 290 to 310, right about, to play that interior line position. And I think that's a guy that has a lot of upside if he's on the offensive line anywhere. But I think playing alongside a more experienced hand, and who we expect to be Seth McLaughlin, we don't expect Carson Hinsman to hold that starting center job, given Seth's experience at Alabama and coming in through the transfer portal there. I think that's a matchup of a trio of interior offensive linemen that could work really well together when you have two kind of stalwart guys with Seth and Donovan Jackson at left guard, and then Luke Montgomery at right guard. I think that move could make a lot of sense. But again, you know, Ohio State's still working through, hey, Who's the best five? What's it look like? Is Josh Fryer a long-term solution at right tackle? Is he viable? Are some of the issues he had with speed rushers going to be persistent into this season? That and like we said, Will linebacker, those are really the two positions that, you know, the eyes are on as the spring rolls forward. And to your point, Dan, about, you know, I think it's interesting, you know, as journalists, again, like you said, it's interesting for us when there's all these position battles and, you know, a lot of storylines to follow and uncertainty with the team. We had a poll on 11 Warriors yesterday rating your excitement for spring ball from like 5 to 10 about, you know, just coming into this for Ohio State. And for me, you know, I'm probably at about a 5, 6, 7 in there. You know, it's cool to see all this talent, but like, you know, it's just the storylines of the uncertainty that is always intriguing about spring to me. You know, almost half of all the votes came in at a 10. Like, people are really excited for this spring. So, you know, there's certainly that connect between the fan excitement and the lack of uncertainty and the knowledge of the talent that is on this roster for Ohio State.
Yeah, and I mean, like, this team is going to be a lot of fun to watch play. Like, don't get us wrong. Like, yeah. I think, like, a spring game will be really fun just to watch these guys go head-to-head. Part of where I'm coming from, too, is most of the time we get to watch practice, we don't get to watch a full practice. Like, I would love to watch the first team versus the first team scrimmage all the time. Like, that would be a lot of fun because then you really get a feel for it. A lot of times when we go to a spring practice, we don't get to see the real meaty stuff. So you're kind of looking for like depth chart kind of stuff, like position change kind of stuff, you know, things that we can draw stories from. You know, it's cool to see Caleb Downs out there, but are we really learning anything from seeing Caleb Downs go through position drills? We've already seen him play at Alabama. He's really, really good. I think if we learned one thing about Caleb Downs, it's you mentioned Will Howard was not with the first team offense to start things off. Seth McLaughlin was not with first team offense to start things off. Caleb Downs was with the first team defense. So that speaks to how good Caleb Downs is. But Caleb Downs is not getting slow played the way even a pair of fifth year seniors who have started at Kansas State and Alabama, those guys are getting slow played. But Caleb Downs, he's right there. He's a starter immediately because he's just that good that there's zero chance that Caleb Downs is not going to be the starting safety for this team. I guess that kind of gets into another question of, is there a chance that Will Howard will not be the starting quarterback of this team? Because I think it's widely assumed that Will Howard will be the starting quarterback for this team. And I think there's good reason to assume that he will be. He started 27 games over 4 years at Kansas State. Ohio State did not bring him in to be a backup. They brought him in to compete for the starting job, and that is the way that they are phrasing it right now, and it's certainly what they wanted us to think coming out of that first practice, because Devin Brown took the first reps at quarterback, and that came after an interview session with Devin Brown on Monday where he was adamant that, you know, he thinks that, you know, he can win the starting quarterback job, that that is his mindset, that he's not going to take a back seat to anybody. And I'll play a clip right here from Devin Brown when he was asked about the possibility that he would transfer from Ohio State because he had a very strong response in return.
Devin, are you definitely going to be here this fall, or is it too early to say anything definitively?
I've said it through and through. I'm a Buckeye, and I'm here to compete no matter what.
Why do you think people have a hard time believing that, Devin? Transfer portal
NIL? Honestly, I think people are cowards. I think people have this, you know, this thought in their own heads that I'm going to leave and I'm a quitter, but that's never been me. I mean, these people live, you know, wherever in their mom's basement, saying stuff about me, and they don't know shit. Excuse my language, but they don't know anything. They don't know who I am. They don't know who I've been, and that's always who I've been.
I was thinking, like, are we the cowards sitting in mom's basement? Not that we have said that we think Devin Brown will transfer, but it's something it's out there. It's just a reality of the college football world today, to where if a quarterback who has been around for a couple years is not in line to start, a lot of times you see that quarterback transfer. It's become so commonplace in college football that I think it's natural for people to jump to that conclusion. Now, with that being said, what Devin Brown said is absolutely true. Every time he has been asked about this, dating back to when he was an early enrollee freshman 2 years ago, every time he has said, I'm all in, I'm a Buckeye through and through, I'm not going anywhere. I'm here to compete no matter who you bring in. I'm here to compete. He's always projected that confidence about himself that he can go out there and win the job. And I think he has a very real belief that he can win this job. The way Ryan Day talked about him after Tuesday's practice suggested that they saw that belief. Ryan Day acknowledged what he had said to the media on Monday and said that they saw those same qualities from him in the first practice on Tuesday. So this is somebody who's going in to this spring with a chip on his shoulder, who wants to prove he's the best quarterback on the roster. I think he's undeniably the underdog in the competition because Will Howard has that starting experience. And again, like Ohio State, this is not Tristan Jebbia. This is not Gunnar Hoke or Chris Chuganov. This is someone you brought in to come in and be the starting quarterback. And so Devin Brown is going to have to outperform Will Howard. Like, it's not, even though he got the first reps on day one, I think we'd both agree, if Devin Brown is going to win the job, he has to be better than Will Howard this offseason. I'm not going to say that he can't do it because, there's a lot of practices to happen and Will has to still go win that job. But I do think we would both agree the ball is in Will's court here. They brought Will in to be a starter. They wouldn't have brought Will in if they were going into this spring with firm confidence that Devin could be the starter. It doesn't necessarily mean they think he can't be the starter, but they did feel a need to bring someone else in who had a lot of starting experience to come in and potentially be the starting quarterback. And so it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I certainly still think that Will is the front runner in that competition, but it's clear that Devin is not going to go down without a fight.
Yeah, that's just not in his character from what we've seen in interviews with him and the confidence, like you said, that he's expressed in himself. And I guess the tweets for the fans out there, burning the boats and all of that, that hullabaloo. But, the fact of the matter is Will Howard is here to win the job, too, of course. And I think Will Howard expects that he's going to have to compete. He's going to have to earn it. But when you look at a guy who has had multiple years as a starter under his belt and is in his last season of college football, he's done after this. There's going to be an urgency and a desperation to make the most of this for Will Howard. So if Devin Brown wants to win the job, he is going to have to be a clear cut above what Will Howard is producing on the practice field. And so this is going to be very interesting to see just coming out of spring where guys are and how long a potential competition goes. How interesting can Devin actually make this? Can he make it drag out, maybe a few weeks even into fall camp and really start to, make some waves, make some headway in this? He's an underdog and I'm fully expecting Will Howard to win the job, I'll be honest. But I do think it's an honest competition right now. I don't think there's anything facetious or inauthentic about Ryan Day saying that there will be a competition because, ultimately you have to make Will prove he's the better guy. You think maybe he is, that might be why you brought him in, but you still have to make him earn it and prove it on the practice field. And the fact is at Kansas State, he wasn't playing defenses like he's going to see every day in practice with this Ohio State unit. In fact, I don't think there's any defense in the country that is like this Ohio State unit. So, which in this quarterback competition, whether it's Will or Devin or even Lincoln Keenholz, you have the best barometer you can have, the best measurement, measuring stick in this defense and how elite it is going to be this year to figure out who's the best from among them. I think that Devin's competitive fire brings something. I think his running ability is, could be comparable to Will Howard's. We really haven't had that chance to evaluate Devin is the problem. There's a lot of tape on Will Howard from his time at Kansas State. Devin was, you know, the Cotton Bowl was our chance to get eyes on Devin Brown finally as Ohio State's starting quarterback, and he gets injured early in the game and we don't get that chance, you know, and the coaching staff doesn't get that chance. So the way the offensive line was playing that day maybe wouldn't have gotten much of a chance anyway. But I think there's a lot of mystery around what Devin Brown is truly capable of. That being said, I don't really expect him to win this job. And, you know, whether or not he sticks it out through the fall, that remains to be seen, too. From his words, though, I mean, he's going to give it his best shot and really try to fight this out.
Just seeing the amount of quarterbacks and how talented all those quarterbacks are, I think, was one thing that was striking from Tuesday's first practice, because you don't usually see five scholarship quarterbacks on the same team, especially not during spring practice. And to see a room where you have Devin Brown, Will Howard, Lincoln Keenholz, Julian Sayin, and Aaron Nolan all out there taking reps just speaks to how deep this quarterback room is right now. I mean, it is right now, it is the deepest quarterback room in college football. Can they get it there? Can they keep it intact through, you know, that post-spring transfer window? We'll see. But right now, I mean, that quarterback room is loaded with talent. And you do, I mean, you at Ohio State, especially with all the talent you have, all the seniors you have on this team, everything that's on the line this year, you have to start the best guy. Like, if someone other than Will Howard emerges as the best guy, that's the guy you have to start. So, I mean, it should be open for competition to at least some degree, because if Devin Brown lights it up and he's your best quarterback, then he should be your guy. You know, if Lincoln Keenholz lights it up, then he should be your guy. Now, you do get the sense that this is going to be more of a Devin versus Will competition than Lincoln. And, you know, and it's a little, Lincoln's in a different situation. I mean, Lincoln today or your Tuesday was his first spring practice ever as a Buckeye. So I think that's something that gets a little bit forgotten with Lincoln, because it's so typical now for freshmen, especially quarterbacks, to be early enrollees, that you forget that Lincoln's still in his first year, you know, as a full year at Ohio State. And so he still has a long way to go in his development. He also took a redshirt last year. And so he doesn't, you know, for Devin, I think it's easy to jump to the fact of, okay, this is a guy who's now going into his third year at Ohio State. Like, if he doesn't win the job, is he really going to want to stick it out for another year to then have to compete for the job again? Based on his words, we take him at his words. That's what he'll do. For Lincoln, he's in a different situation. He still has all 4 years of eligibility. He's not a guy, you know, who's necessarily ready to go start for a major program right now anyway. And so he's a guy that there's not quite that same sense of urgency for him to be a starter this year. Now, his mindset when I talk to him is he wants to be the starter too. That's his goal going into this spring. But you could sense from talking to him if there's a, you know, sense of reality there too, that, you know, being a guy who's in just his first spring, it's going to be tough for him to beat out a Will Howard to win the starting job this year. So he's not necessarily viewing this spring as the be all end all for what his Ohio State career is going to be. And then, you know, again, you also have 2 5-star freshmen. Like, you can't forget about those guys in this equation. Now, with that being said, I do think that actually being there at practice on Tuesday was a reminder of it. Like, these guys are freshmen who are practicing for the first time. I know, you know, Garrett Codd was over there watching the quarterbacks. They're working on snaps, and both of them fumbled their first snaps that they took from the centers, and then they got chewed out by Chip Kelly, the new offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. And so those guys have a lot to learn. I think you could see that, you know, watching Julian in particular, you can see the arm talent, you can see the ability. There were a lot of erratic throws when he was just throwing in individual drills. And you'd expect that from a guy who's going through his first practice. You know, I think Aaron Nolan, you definitely see the physical tools there. You know, his just arm strength, his ability to throw the ball. I thought he looked more physically mature at this point than Julian Sain. But both those guys have a long way to go in their development. And so, you know, it's unlikely that either of those guys are really going to be a factor in that quarterback competition this spring. But as we've said before, you know, it's going to be interesting. You know, we get to watch practice again on Thursday. Then we don't get to watch it again until the student appreciation day in a few weeks. It's going to be interesting when we get out there for that student appreciation day practice to see what the quarterback reps look like. I think that's going to be more telling as to who's made a move in this quarterback competition and where things really stand. Because I think Ryan Day does know there's is maybe more of a sense of urgency this year than there was last year to come out of spring with a quarterback decision, because you do have so many players to manage in that room. At the same time, when Chip Kelly was asked about it, he said from his experience, it's always worked out best when it happens organically. So I think their hope is that, you know, whether it's Will Howard or someone else, that somebody will separate themselves from the pack by the end of spring and be that guy. That didn't happen last year. We kind of saw why ultimately, as you know, Kyle McCord never reached that level that he was expected to. And that's just another reason too why I think, you know, if you're an Ohio State fan, you'd feel a lot better about it. If Ohio State comes out of a spring and this guy's our starter, we feel really good about him. You'd feel better about it in that sense, knowing that, hey, this guy has done what he's needed to do to prove he could be the starter, than to have a repeat of last year where the competition dragged on into the season and then Ohio State's offense never found its groove.
Right. And maybe even have more comfort if that guy is Will Howard, because Devin Brown was the guy who couldn't beat Kyle McCord last year. Now, I always say, you know, development's a thing, and I think fans forget that sometimes. You know, I know I have friends who are quick to write certain players off after they have a down year, after they have, you know, they're lacking maybe as a sophomore, and then, you know, guys take that next step in year three. And for Devin, you know, that is what that would indicate to me, is, you know, a big step in his development, fully capable of doing that, you know. But from a fan perspective, maybe you do want to hear Will Howard's name called, because I think there's some negative emotions around Kyle McCord, right or wrong. You know, he never got to that echelon that he needed to, like you said, but also, you know, it's he ultimately wasn't a bad quarterback, just didn't, you know, win that Michigan game, didn't get to that tier that's expected of an Ohio State quarterback, right? But whoever the quarterback is, you know, we got our first chance this week to lay eyes on Jeremiah Smith, Dan, and that guy looks like he could suit up for an NFL team tomorrow. I mean, the height, the physical development that's already there with him, the hands, the just how natural everything looks for him. You know, I've spoken on his polish at length on this podcast and how he's coming in at a very advanced stage in his development because of where he played football, because of his 7-on-7 background, all these things. And, you know, that's been apparent. Even just like we had some interviews with some quarterbacks, with Travion Henderson and Emeka Buka, some other guys on Monday, and Jeremiah was out there on the Monarch machine catching passes, and you look at him and you go, oh, that's a freshman, you know, how is that possible? And he's going to be a guy that forces his way, if not into his starting job this year, of course, as we've talked about, at least into the rotation, because it's clear that he's coming in super advanced in his physical and his technical development. And, you know, I'm that's one of the players I'm most excited to see this spring. And I think fans are most excited to see, too, because, man, that is a specimen there, Dan.
Yeah, I'll play another clip from Devin Brown here, as he had some very high praise for Jeremiah Smith on Monday.
He's a freak. He's going to be next level. I mean, that guy handles things the right way, does everything right in the right room. And I was throwing with him yesterday, and every time I throw at him, it's like, geez, this kid's a stud. He's going to be a freak.
And he could catch almost any pass. I mean,
yeah, I mean, he's just so smooth. Like, yeah. He's just super smooth, super athletic. He's a big kid. I mean, what is he, 6'3", 6'4"? Can snag it literally anywhere. Like, he was making a couple one-handers yesterday. I was like, this kid's just freaky.
Yeah, and that's just what you hear from everybody when you hear that word freak a lot. I mean, everybody's throwing that word around to Jeremiah Smith. And, you know, to your point, I mean, is he ready to play in the NFL right now? Probably not, but he's probably not that far off. I mean, he's a rare talent. There's a reason why he was the number one overall recruit in his class. And again, you want to be careful about putting too high of expectations on a guy who's, you know, now practiced one time as a Buckeye, but it's just hard to envision him not having a big role for Ohio State this year. And I think, you know, you just have a lot of reason to feel really good about this receiving core this year. I think even with Marvin Harrison Jr. gone and with Julian Fleming gone, I think with Carnell Tate and Brandon Innes entering their second year and then Jeremiah Smith coming in, I think those three guys with Emeka Buka coming back gives you all the reason to be confident that Ohio State's receiver room could be one of, if not the best in the country once again, just as it has been every year since Brian Hartline became the wide receivers coach.
Always a help for a quarterback competition to have those kinds of dudes to throw to, you know, and even last year with McCord, we saw those guys make some plays when it was needed and help Ohio State in some big moments and some big games. But, you know, the receivers were also a little less on the priority list for Ohio State fans, or depending on where your interest lies, a little more with those receivers were the main guys headlining the punt return rotation. And it's funny because we almost always see some sort of lineup at punt returners when we get to view these sorts of practice windows early, because, you know, punt is usually one of the first things Ohio State does in a practice. So whenever we get these like 30 to 45 minute windows, we get to watch the punt return team. Emeka Buka was leading the line out there, has a lot of return experience for Ohio State, even dating back to his freshman year as a kick returner. And, you know, he returned punts last year up until he got injured, and then Ohio State took him out of that role to keep him healthy. It's one of the reasons I might be surprised to see him actually be the punt returner come fall. And it's hard to read into any of these things, again, with this being the very first spring practice. I think, you know, outside of him, it was a lot of receivers too. Carnell Tate and Brandon Innes were back there. I think Brandon Innes to me might be the most intriguing option on the roster, but Jeremiah Smith was also taking punt return reps. Jaden Ballard, who filled some of those duties last year after Ibuka got hurt, was back there. The most notable absence was Caleb Downs. And Caleb Downs had one punt return that went for 85 yards and a touchdown at Alabama. That one return is more yards on one return than all of Ohio State punt returns combined last year. In total, he had four returns for 87 yards. Only got two yards on three other returns. He definitely wasn't Alabama's punt returner the whole season, but he showed he has a lot of ability in that area. And for a punt return team that really hasn't done much in the recent history of Ohio State football, I think the return game has generally been an area Ohio State has been lacking the last few years. We felt that might be an intriguing option for them to look at coming into this season. Now, again, the first spring practice, maybe Downs gets a look there eventually. But on Tuesday, all we saw really were receivers and sure-handed guys, and some of the names we're accustomed to at that position. But outside of Downs, I think Innes is the most the option that perks my ears up the most, because I really think his shiftiness in space, his explosion, he has some interesting athletic traits that could make him good in that role.
Yeah, remember at this time a year ago, Marvin Harrison Jr. was returning punts on the first day of spring practice, and everybody was freaking out about that. So, yeah, you can't read too much into who's returning the punts or who's leading the punt return rotation on the first day of practice. There's a lot of options out there, but I would agree that of the guys that we did see returning punts on Tuesday, that I think Brandon Innes would be the most intriguing option. I don't think you need Emeka Buka to be returning punts at this stage of his career. And I think that's some of the calculus of Caleb Downs, too, is do we really need our superstar safety out there returning punts? Now, like you said, we talked about it before, slow playing some of the transfers. Maybe they just don't want to put that on his plate on day one of spring practice at Ohio State. But, you know, we'll see on that. I mean, one thing we know about Caleb Downs is that you listen to everybody talk about him. This is a guy who is capable of doing a lot of different things, and he's capable of processing a lot of different information, and he's going to work his butt off to try to do his job to the best of his ability. And we learned even more about that last week at the NFL Scouting Combine, where, you know, I was able to talk to a few Alabama defensive backs about Caleb Downs playing with him last year. And they all just had nothing but great things to say about him. Jalen Key, who started at safety for Alabama last year alongside Caleb Downs, he said, quote, "He's a guy that's probably generational. His maturity level is through the roof. He's more mature than a lot of sophomores, juniors, probably seniors I've seen throughout my whole career. He's a dog, and mentally, he's already prepared to be in the NFL." It's probably true on Caleb Downs. You said of Jeremiah Smith, we may want to wait like a year before we say he's ready to go play in the NFL. I mean, Caleb Downs probably is ready to go play in the NFL right now. And Jalen Key predicted that he will be a future top five NFL draft pick. There's no doubt that in 2 or 3 years, we are going to see Caleb Downs at the NFL Scouting Combine. And a couple other Alabama defensive backs there as well. Kool-Aid McKinstry, who was Alabama's primary punt returner last year, and Terrion Arnold. They're both cornerbacks who are projected to go in the first round, and they also had really good things to say about Caleb Downs, and I'll play those clips for you now.
Caleb Downs is like when he was a freshman, he was like he already had been there 3 years. He understood how to do everything. He understood his body. He understood how to play. He understood coaching. Ohio State, I feel, is getting a great player, man, and very excited for Caleb.
Caleb Downs, he's one of my best friends. I mean, the guy, very high football IQ, and honestly, testament to the guy's character. When he first came to Alabama, we had a whole room. They said, "Give us something that you're going to accomplish while you're here." Caleb walked up there. He said, "I'm going to be the best safety that ever come through here." So that just shows you the type of guy he is off the wall. I mean, he works hard. He's a great person. He's my brother.
It's one thing to say you're going to be the best player to ever come through a program like Alabama, best safety. It's another to do what he's done off the field, and what you hear about Caleb, his dedication, his work ethic, his understanding of the game, his dedication to film, his dedication to taking care of his body, all of those things that it actually takes. Ridiculous talent. Obviously, you don't make 107 tackles as a freshman in the SEC without a ridiculous talent. But it's that those other things that go into being a great football player that go beyond just the talent that have been the most impressive to me hearing about Caleb since he got to Ohio State, whether from, you know, those interviews that you conducted, those quotes that you got at the NFL Scouting Combine, whether it be from his former high school coaches, whether it be from people in Ohio State's program who have had the chance to work with him for a couple of months now. That's the number one thing that stands out to me. Been a while since we spoke with Caleb, got to speak with him at his when he first transferred in here to Ohio State. But we spoke to a lot of people this week, Dan, a lot of other people, nearly 30 interviews with recent or current Ohio State football players over the past week between your work at the Scouting Combine, the interviews that we've already had this week, the 1870 Society event that we went to over the weekend. There's been a lot of info coming out and just talking with all these people. The most interesting one, I think, out of all of it has to be Chip Kelly, because this is a guy coming in to be the head coach of the offense in the same way that Jim Knowles is the head coach of the defense. That point that we've made before. And it's, you know, it was clear talking to both Ryan Day and Chip Kelly on Tuesday just how much this is going to allow Ryan to step back into that sort of CEO role. And, you know, I think the ability to work with Ryan was a big reason why Chip wanted to go to Ohio State, because of his relationship, having coached Day in the past, having had Day as a coach on his staff at other places in the past. And he dove into that, a lot of that, when we spoke to him on Tuesday.
I think it started when we were preparing for our bowl game. Ryan Gunderson, who's a great quarterback coach, left to go to Oregon State as the coordinator. So he wasn't there. So I actually coached the quarterbacks during the bowl game. And I just started to think, like, I hadn't actually coached a position since 2008. And then I think my wife remarked, she's like, I haven't seen you this happy in a long time. And to me, the best part of football is football. And so you got to do football and not do some of the things that involve with the head coaching deal. And I had a chance after we beat Boise in the bowl game and as we started recruiting just to kind of think about what that experience was like. And then I get to make the decision on what my future is going to be. And so what do I want to do? So I started to look into, is there an opportunity? And it would have been the right spot to go somewhere and just coach a position again and be back with that group. Because I think as a head coach, you sit in on position meetings, but then you're always getting pulled out. And there's other things that are involved with being a head coach. And I think it's more of a CEO operation right now. You know, it's the job and the landscape, as we all know, of college football has changed. So I just thought at the time that, you know, there's a story about John Lennon when he was a little kid that had an assignment of what do you want to be when you grow up? And he said, I want to be happy. And then his teacher said, I don't think you understand the assignment. And his mom said, I don't think you understand life. So I just want to be happy. And I'm really happy coaching a position, really happy to be at this place. You know, it would have taken a special place for me to leave UCLA because I love those players and I love that coaching staff. But to be here with Ryan, I had a great relationship. I've known Ryan since he was a little kid. So I think a lot of things just fell into place that way.
Not expecting a John Lennon reference during Chip Kelly's press conference today. I also learned who Al Haig was today. Did you know who Al Haig was before that press conference?
I did not know when, you know, we looked him up afterward, you know, the Secretary of State who thought he was president after Reagan was shot was just pretty funny. And I think Chip even kind of admitted that that might not be a reference that a lot of people would get. But
I think one of the older reporters in the room let him know that that might be a reference. But,
right.
Some of us younger folks in the room may not understand showing our youth there, but. You hear that clip from Chip Kelly, and it's still like a little crazy thinking about this is a guy who left a Big Ten head coaching job, what is now a Big Ten head coaching job at UCLA, to become an offensive coordinator in the same conference. But you hear that answer, and he really seems like very at peace with this. Like he seems like genuinely very happy to be in this position, to not have to deal with the added stressors of being a head coach anymore. And it's almost, you almost kind of see a trade off here between Ryan Day and Chip Kelly, to where Ryan Day, the past 5 years as Ohio State's head coach, he's wanted to balance that being the offensive play caller and the quarterback coach and the head coach all at the same time. And he's realized that he needs to take that step back and be the CEO of a program, but he doesn't have the time anymore to be in the weeds, drawing up offensive game plans and coaching the quarterbacks every single day. And Chip just wants to do that stuff. He doesn't want to do the CEO stuff anymore. And so that's what makes this a natural marriage for these two, is that Ryan Day knows he's at a point now as a head coach where he needs to delegate that responsibility. And now he has someone that he probably trusts more than literally any other coach he could have hired, because this is the guy who coached him in college. They are very close friends. And you can see it really felt like, talking to Ryan Day on Tuesday, seeing him out there in the practice field, it really does feel like a weight has been lifted off his shoulders in a sense, to where I think last year at this time, he knew he kind of needed to do that, but he just wasn't ready to do it. He wasn't comfortable with giving up the control of the offense yet. And I think now that he has someone in Chip Kelly who he trusts so much, who he built his own coaching philosophy and offensive scheme off of, I think now he truly feels like, I can delegate that stuff. I can trust Chip to coach the quarterbacks, to run the offense. I know that Chip is capable of doing things the way I want them done and the way they need to be done for us to achieve our goals. And now that allows Ryan Day to work with the entire team and to really focus on the responsibilities of being a head coach. And I came out of Tuesday feeling even better. We were already both very high on this hire and thought it was a home run. And I came out of Tuesday feeling even better about it because it doesn't feel forced. An arrangement like this could easily feel forced when you have a head coach coming in to be an offensive coordinator and quarterback coach. But it doesn't at all because it just feels like both guys are happy and content with this arrangement. And they both believe that by working collaboratively, that they can take this Ohio State offense to the next level.
Yeah, it's like having another copy of Ryan Day in the meeting rooms. I mean, I've said that before. It was interesting to hear what the transition has been like since Chip Kelly got there, just that basically like a lot of the plays are the same and they just have different names at Ohio State. Like that's Ryan said, the biggest adjustment for him, biggest learning curve on day one was just terminology. Like, oh, that's that. Okay. So we call it that because they want to keep the terminology the same for the players. But he also said that Chip has already started adding new wrinkles in the run game, which I think is one of the most interesting things about this from a scheme perspective. And when we talked to Kyle Jones recently, you know, he had talked about a lot of what Chip Kelly is going to do in terms of running the football. And that is something that's really going to elevate this roster, this offensive line, how he can simplify things. And you have two phenomenal running backs. You know, he spoke to that, but he's going to design a scheme that fits the players best. You know, sticking with the John Lennon theme is not hard to imagine how Ohio State's offense could be really good this year under Chip Kelly's guidance. You know, the guy's an innovator. That's what Ryan Day said all day on Tuesday. And I think that ability to not only innovate but to teach, and he said it best, I think, you don't practice it until you learn how to do it right. You practice it until you can't do it wrong. And his ability to not only come up with an innovative scheme that fits his players but also teach it to a sense that it's just second nature to them, and then you almost get to play a lot freer as a result of that. I think that whole encompassing thing, along with allowing Day to step back and be that CEO, is why this is a home run, like you said, to both you and I.
I've had Imagine stuck in my head ever since that press conference. So thanks, Chip, for getting some John Lennon stuck in my head. You mentioned the NFL Combine, not really the most eventful combine from Ohio State's perspective, at least not in terms of the workouts. Marvin Harrison Jr. did not work out. Mayan Williams, who we learned underwent a cartilage replacement surgery in his knee, he's not going to be able to work out at all before the draft. He hopes to be cleared in time for training camp. Mike Hall, who I think we were both excited to see how he would test, he was unable to work out due to a hamstring injury, but will work out at Ohio State's Pro Day on March 20. So we'll look forward to seeing how he performs there. The only Buckeyes who ran the 40 were Josh Proctor, who clocked a 4.55, Cade Stover, who clocked a 4.65, Matt Jones, who clocked a 5.21. All solid times for them, given their positions, but nothing that's necessarily going to elevate their draft stock. You know, I think this was a combine that I came out of it where I don't really feel like any of the Buckeyes' draft stocks changed significantly based on what happened in Indianapolis. Like, I don't necessarily think that any of their draft stocks dropped. I mean, unless anything happened behind the scenes that we didn't see that would have hurt them. But I don't know that any of them really elevated their draft stocks either. So I think they all are kind of in the same positions that they were coming into it. And, you know, we'll certainly see how Pro Day goes, and we'll certainly talk more about that before the NFL draft in late April. But, you know, I do think a couple of moments that stood out. I mean, for one, you know, it's been kind of a punchline, you know, at least among Ohio State beat writers, that Tommy Eichenberg was not the best interview during his Ohio State career. You've probably seen the Jim Knowles clips saying that Tommy only speaks in grunts, but I got to give Tommy credit. I mean, I think of all the Ohio State players who met with the media at the combine, Tommy might have been the best. And like, that's a credit to Tommy. I think he was a lot more engaging than we've seen from him in the past. And I think some of that, it's almost kind of that Bill Belichick effect of, if you're asking him to break down an opponent or talk about Ohio State's game plan, he is not going to give you anything. He's just too smart. He's not going to do that. But when you're talking to him about more introspective stuff, his own stuff, he was, you know, a little bit more open. And I did think he was very introspective when he was talking about the end of his senior season and how hard it was for him to be unable to play at his best versus Michigan, unable to play at all in three of Ohio State's final four games of a year. He said that was, quote, very, very hard for him. And he felt like a lot of people down, or he felt like he let a lot of people down. Now, I think if you asked anyone inside the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, they would not agree with that assessment, but Tommy let them down. He was a two-time captain for Ohio State. I mean, for him, just to play in a Michigan game speaks to his toughness, because he had dislocated his elbow 3 weeks before that. He revealed that at the combine, that that was the injury. And he was playing against Michigan 3 weeks later. Now, it was clear he was not himself in that game. And I think now we understand fully why, because he was playing with a dislocated elbow. He couldn't tackle the way he normally does because he's playing with one arm out there. But he still played every defensive snap in the game, which speaks to his toughness, which speaks to how badly he wanted to win for Ohio State. And I certainly think those are traits that are going to be desired by NFL teams. Probably less surprising was that Cade Stover certainly showed some personality at the NFL scouting combine. And I think the most telling moment of that came at the end of his interview session, when he was asked about his struggles as a blocker, and he did not take that sitting down.
You said blocking was an issue? This seems to be a common thing. I'd be curious why you said that, if you don't mind me asking. You got any examples?
Yeah,
I know. Everybody's got issues. I would agree with you a couple of times, but I'm here to tell you, old PPF or PFF, whatever the hell it is, they don't know my scheme. They don't know what the hell I'm doing out there. And not the point. But yeah, that seems to be a common theme going on here. Like I said, I mean, if you're not afraid to miss, I'm not trying to move somebody. I mean, if you're afraid to miss, I mean, you're not going to get nothing down. You're going to play passive. We were okay with that. You miss a couple. I mean, you miss one, you're trying to headhunt somebody. That's trouble. I struggle with that sometimes. I get my head out in front of my shoulder sometimes, and like I'm still playing defense, and rather just make a solid block. But the common theme behind we struggle block, and I think it's just, I think it's a misconception. I mean, yeah, I can think of fucking million blocks, but but then again, I mean, that's life. That's the way it goes. It's always 100% effort, always full tilt, full time. There's no doubt about it.
A lot of times these guys come out of their shells when you're no longer under the pressures, the almost control that you have to be when you're in the program, you know, trying not to say anything that's going to hurt the team, trying to stay almost on brand. Not to say that everything, not to say these guys aren't authentic when they speak to us, but just that you have to be very careful about what you say, or a lot more careful than this setting where you're no longer actually an Ohio State player and you can kind of open up and be more honest. In certainly Cade's case, in Tommy's case, being more introspective. And to Cade's point, you know, I see some of what he's saying, because I think there was a really, I think there was this conception that he wasn't a willing blocker from some people, and that was never the case to me. Now, sometimes, like he said, he got his head out in front, going a little too hard to make an impact block when he really just needed to occupy his guy on a few occasions. That happened. But there were times, yeah, Cade was pushing a guy 10 yards down the field. There were a couple of goal line plays where he pancaked someone and it led to a touchdown. I mean, he missed blocks in his career, true, and there were plenty of examples on film of that. But I think the conception that he wasn't a willing blocker, that he didn't want to be great at that, I think is wrong. And I can see why he would get angry about something like that. And look, I've had my share of critiques about Pro Football Focus grades too, so I can also understand PPF. Where he's coming from in that perspective.
Old PPF. That's right. Yeah. It's gonna be a while before I don't think of Pro Football Focus as old PPF. But yeah, I mean, it's Pro Football Focus. It's much like any resource where I think their grades can be valuable. I think that they give an interesting perspective on things, but you can't take their grades as pure gospel and say, well, you know, because this guy's graded higher than this guy, then that means he's a better player. Like, there's a lot of nuance that goes into that. You need to actually really go back and, you know, watch the players to truly evaluate them. But yeah, I mean, I think in Cade's case, it definitely, I certainly never questioned whether he was a willing blocker. I think he is going to have to continue to improve his technique as a blocker if he's going to be a full-time tight end, every down kind of player in the NFL. But the physical tools are there. We've seen the flashes. I think, you know, you saw what he did as a receiver last year. If he can get more consistent as a blocker and refine his technique, I think he has the chance to have a very long and successful NFL career. And so, you know, we will see how all of that plays out. Again, we'll talk more about that when we get closer to the NFL draft time in late April. But I want to talk a little bit about basketball before we wrap up this podcast, because it was a successful week for the Ohio State men's basketball program as the Buckeyes won two games in 1 week for the first time since the end of December, start of January. First time in 2 months as the Buckeyes beat Nebraska and Michigan in back-to-back home games, both by double digits. And we've talked about the path for this team to get back into the NCAA tournament conversation. And they've completed the first steps of that now. You know, they got that win against Michigan State on the road. Now they've beaten Nebraska and Michigan at home. You got another very important game to wrap up the regular season coming up this Sunday, if it can beat Rutgers on the road. And we can't take that for granted. I mean, this is still a team that's only won one true road game this year, so cannot take that for granted. But it's a game Ohio State should win with the way it's been playing. And if Ohio State can win that game, it will clinch a first round bye in the Big Ten tournament, which seemed very unlikely a couple weeks ago. And then I think you get into a situation where you go into the Big Ten tournament feeling like, if Ohio State can win two games in Minneapolis, I think it becomes a very real conversation for Ohio State. Now, that's not going to be easy, because that would mean a quarterfinal win over a top two seed in either Purdue or Illinois. But I think if Ohio State can do that, if it can get that kind of win on its resume, I would say, I think if Ohio State can win its next three games in a row, including two Big Ten tournament games, I think this Ohio State team would be in the NCAA tournament. That's not going to be an easy task to accomplish, but it also no longer seems too far-fetched. You know, a few weeks ago, it felt like there was no hope with this team. Now you do feel like you've got that glimmer of hope as the regular season wraps up. Got to take care of business first and go beat Rutgers on Sundays. If you lose to Rutgers on Sunday, then you're probably looking at having to go win the Big Ten tournament if you're going to go make the NCAA tournament. But they've created a path for themselves with their improved play over the last couple of weeks. And certainly you got to give a ton of credit to Jake Diebler for that, as Jake Diebler is now 4-1 as Ohio State's interim head coach.
There's a lot of subtle changes that have happened with this team, but I think the most important and impressive thing is how they've learned to close games under Diebler. And the run they made to end up blowing out Michigan, the way they held on to the lead against Nebraska, coming back when you were down 12 in the second half and beating Michigan State on a buzzer beater, just especially these last three games, the way that this team has come together. And there have been several key factors in that too. Depth has been really important. Getting scoring from guys like Devin Royal, Dale Bonner making strides, Zed Key making big plays even. Scotty Middleton starting to find his stroke. He knocked down some big three-pointers in that Michigan game and in that Nebraska game. And the way these guys are coming together and playing with urgency and pace, you know, I wrote a story on Sunday about how a team often adopts the identity and the mentality of its head coach. And I think that's especially true in basketball. Because in basketball is this game where there's 50 some odd, 60 some odd, 70 some odd scoring plays a game. And so when there's that many different plays that are influencing the outcome on the scoreboard, your approach to the game becomes very apparent. And what's become very apparent over these last couple of weeks is the pace and the aggression that Ohio State is playing with on both ends of the floor. They're creating turnovers, 14 steals against Michigan. Before Diebler took over, they were one of the bottom, they were in the bottom 30 among 362 college basketball teams in the Division I for fast break points per game. And since they were averaging less than six per game, and now they're averaging they've been averaging double digit fast break points per game under Diebler since then. Had 22 against Michigan, 22-2 the advantage in fast break points there. So the transition offense, the aggression on defense to generate steals, to have better contests, to be just tighter on the defensive end, and then push that pace up the floor on offense. The differences in this team since Diebler took over, they aren't like big, broad, sweeping changes in the systems and how they run their offense, and especially in the half court. But they are just these subtle tweaks, rolling more depth, having more transition, having more aggression on both ends of the floor that have paid huge dividends, and I think have really played to the talent that Ohio State has. And if Diebler isn't going to get into the conversation to be Ohio State's next full-time head coach, and I know a lot of our readers are very high on that right now, I think there's still a ways to go before we reach that discussion. Namely, making the NCAA tournament and making some noise there. I do think that he has at least coached his way into being like, hey, this is a guy that a mid-major program is going to take a serious look at. But, you know, an interesting point that was also brought up to me is that whoever the next Ohio State head coach is should seriously consider trying to retain him as an assistant. And that might also be a way to keep this roster together and keep some of the talented pieces you have in Columbus, regardless of who that next head coach is. For the tournament path, like you said, Dan, I think the toughest hurdle left to clear was Nebraska after they beat Michigan State, because you had to win one of those two games against Minnesota and Michigan State on the road to really give yourself a shot. After they beat Michigan State, to me, out of the last three games, the toughest hurdle to clear was Nebraska, because I just thought all around, best team left on Ohio State's schedule. Michigan's at the very bottom of the Big Ten. Rutgers is toward the bottom themselves. So I felt like that was the toughest game for them left. And now that they have that momentum, certainly not going to take this team for granted for anything on the road, because, you know, this is they required a buzzer beater to break a program worst losing streak in road games. But the way they've been playing, the confidence they have right now in each other, the new aggressive play style, to me, I'm going to be picking them to win on Sunday. And with that, you get two quadrant two wins in the Big Ten tournament there. Maybe even quadrant one, depending on who you play in the quarterfinals, another quadrant one win. And that resume is starting to stack up, especially when a lot of bubble teams lost this week. Teams like Ole Miss, Seton Hall. I really think there's a realistic shot in an at-large bid if you can at least get to the quarterfinals of the Big Ten tournament, a.k.a. win your next three games for Ohio State.
To be clear, I think we're talking not just get to the quarterfinals, win in the quarterfinals, because that's what it's going to take. You're going to get a first round bye. Yeah. So you have to win. And we talk about the toughest hurdle. Like, that's be the toughest hurdle, because it's probably going to be playing Purdue or Illinois. But that's the path. Like, the path is there. And so it's going to be a fun couple of weeks to see if Ohio State can find a way into what would certainly have been a very improbable NCAA tournament run a few weeks ago. I think no matter how this plays out, Jake Diebler is going to be a head coach somewhere next year if he wants to be. I think he's earned that. I think there's a good chance he would have been a head coach somewhere next year, even if Chris Holtmann didn't get fired in the middle of a season. I think he was already someone who would have gotten a look from, you know, those mid-major type programs. I think now he's in a position where he could look at it and say, okay, do I just go take the first mid-major job I can get, or should I hold out for something else? And that, I think that would be your hope. If you're a new head coach coming in and you want to retain him, you would hope that maybe you can sell Jake Diebler on the idea of, hey, stay here for another year or two, and you might be able to set yourself up for a bigger job somewhere else. We'll see how that all plays out. I mean, I don't know how much upside there really would be for Jake Diebler at this point to stay on staff as an assistant, because I think that, you know, he's already started proving that he is worthy of a head coaching job somewhere or other. Of course, money's going to talk in that conversation too. And so, you know, we'll see how that ultimately plays out. You know, I think it feels right now like, you know, there's probably three guys who are the biggest names in this conversation right now. That's Sean Miller, who we talked about last week. And that's Jake Diebler, who we just talked about. And then Dusty May is the guy who seems to now be gaining more traction. We had talked last week that we thought it was probably more likely Dusty May would end up at Indiana. But it seems now like maybe there's some traction toward Indiana keeping Mike Woodson. And if that happens, then I think Ohio State has a real shot to get Dusty May. And we both said it right away on the first podcast we did after Chris Holtmann was fired. We both agreed we thought Dusty May would be one of the best choices for his job. So if Ohio State can go get Dusty May, I think that would be a great hire for Ohio State. Sean Miller is still a guy who, you know, certainly has a chance to get his job. And we'll see if Diebler can mount some kind of run that really does make it realistic for him to get this head coaching job. But, you know, feels like there's, you know, at least a couple of enticing options out there on the table. And certainly now that Ross Bjork is at Ohio State, we saw him at the game on Sunday. We saw him at spring practice on Tuesday. That search has now, you know, very much begun, and he will be hard at work on that, as I think especially now that he's not the actual athletic director yet, there's no question that the number one priority on his agenda right now is finding Ohio State's next men's basketball coach.
It should be at the top of the list, and it is. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I think that, again, we've talked about it at length. This first coaching search for Bjork is going to be very telling for his tenure. Going to be very interesting to see what his process is like when hiring a candidate. And, you know, coming in, I feel like it does lessen the chances for Diebler, because I think Bjork's going to want to make his own splash, his own wave with a hire. That being said, if you prove it on the court, it's hard to argue with results. And so, you know, I think, again, we talked about kind of that. If you make, the deeper you go, getting this team first to the NCAA tournament, potentially, if you do make that run, a little bit of a run in the Big Ten tournament to win those couple of games, and then ultimately get the at-large bid, because it's certainly not a given, even if they do reach the Big Ten semifinals, that they get into the tourney. The only guarantee is to win the Big Ten tournament. They're going to be, the best they can do is become a bubble team if they don't win the Big Ten tournament. But if Diebler can get them to the NCAA tournament, get them to like a Sweet 16, you have to give him a look. I think there's no way you can't after what the season was and then what it became under his leadership. And again, if nothing else, my job has become a lot more fun the last couple weeks, Dan, covering a team that's winning, that has some excitement about it, that fans are excited to watch. I mean, it's a whole new feeling compared to what this season was just a few short weeks ago.
Ohio State men's basketball will play in the Big Ten tournament next week. Ohio State women's basketball will play in the Big Ten tournament this week. And when you talk about winning a Big Ten tournament, that is certainly the goal for these Buckeyes, as they are the number one seed in the Big Ten tournament. They clinched the outright Big Ten title last Wednesday when they avenged their previous loss to Michigan. They did have their 15-game winning streak snapped on the road at Iowa on Sunday, but had already clinched the number one seed in the Big Ten tournament. And certainly a possibility that we could see a trilogy game between Ohio State and Iowa in the Big Ten tournament championship, as Ohio State is the number one seed, Iowa is the number two seed. You look at the path for Ohio State in this Big Ten tournament. They'll play either Illinois or Maryland in the quarterfinals. You would think that should be a game that this team should be able to win comfortably. They're going to be a comfortable favorite again in the semifinals, assuming they get there. Likely will play Michigan State or Nebraska. Two good teams, NCAA tournament teams there. But teams that Ohio State has beaten convincingly already this season. And so you would think that Ohio State has a very good chance of getting to the finals of the Big Ten tournament, which is where Ohio State would likely meet either Iowa or Indiana, two of the teams that are also among the best in the country. And I certainly think CBS has its fingers crossed and is hoping for that Ohio State-Iowa matchup, because Sunday's Ohio State-Iowa game was the most watched regular season women's basketball game in 25 years. Now, certainly that was bolstered by the fact that Caitlin Clark entered that game needing just 18 points to break Pete Maravich's record for the most points ever by an NCAA basketball player of either gender. And she broke that record just before halftime. But Caitlin Clark draws numbers. This Ohio State team is drawing a lot of excitement. I think that would be a really fun game to watch if it comes to fruition, and a lot on the line for this team this week, because there's going to be no doubt if Ohio State wins the Big Ten tournament that it will be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. If it doesn't, then it'll be a little bit more of an interesting conversation for Ohio State on Selection Sunday. Either way, Ohio State is going to be a one or two seed in the NCAA tournament at this point. I think that's pretty safe. Ohio State will be hosting first and second round games in the NCAA tournament in a couple of weeks as a result. But certainly the goal right now for this week is just to go win the Big Ten tournament, to win the second of three trophies that Ohio State is chasing this year. And certainly something that will have significant ramifications on Ohio State in its quest to earn a number one seed.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be awesome to see just what this women's team can accomplish. I mean, we've seen how they've played throughout the season, how exciting it's been, that they just have a really entertaining brand of basketball. We've talked about it before with the press defense, with all the turnovers they force, with the stars like Cody McMahon, like J.C. Sheldon. And, you know, some of those stars got some major recognition this week, some well-deserved recognition at the Big Ten Awards. Kevin McGuff won Coach of the Year. Celeste Taylor, Defensive Player of the Year, just like she was in the ACC last season. So I wonder how many basketball players of either gender have won a player Defensive Player of the Year in two different conferences, Dan. That has to be
not many.
Not many. That's pretty special there. J.C. Sheldon and Cody McMahon, both first team All Big Ten. No shocker there. They've been studs all year for Ohio State. And second team All Big Ten to both Celeste Taylor and Taylor Theory. And Taylor's been a really underrated part of this team's success, and what she provides there on both ends of the floor for this team. It's been, I mean, just the way they've all come together and the identity of this team, how can they ultimately win the Big Ten tournament, and then how far do they go in the NCAA tournament? It's probably right now the most exciting team to follow in Ohio State sports this spring, even with all that's happening with the men's basketball team and the momentum they gained under Jake Diebler. This women's team and how good it is and what is on the table for them potentially being a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. I mean, if you're not on the bandwagon, you got to hop on it now, because they're about to, I mean, they're playing for everything now. All the postseason stuff, it's right on the doorstep for this Ohio State team.
Women's hockey might have something to say about that. Women's hockey,
that is true.
Number one ranked team in the country. They will be playing for a conference championship this weekend as well at the WCHA final faceoff. Ohio State, Wisconsin, that's kind of the Ohio State, Iowa of women's hockey there. Ohio State and Wisconsin, they played for the national championship last year. Wisconsin won that game. Ohio State had beaten Wisconsin at home this year, beat them in the first game at Madison, but then Wisconsin took the last game. So I think that's going to be the anticipated matchup there. Could be a very fun Sunday in Ohio State sports, because you could have a Big Ten tournament championship game for women's basketball. You could have a WCHA tournament championship game for Ohio State women's hockey, and you'll have men's basketball's regular season finale. So should be a fun Sunday for Ohio State sports. We will be watching it all. We will be continuing to cover all things spring football as that unfolds for Ohio State. And we will be back here next week on Real Pod Wednesdays to break it all down.